Our next speaker is Kerry Walib. Please welcome.
Thank you. Hi. I'm Kerry Walib. I am a regional vegetable specialist with Washington State University. I work in our irrigated Columbia Basin in the center part of Washington where it's hot and dry. I work primarily with potatoes, onions, and sweet corn there. Sweet corn is an important crop for Washington State. Our growers produce about 30% of the nation's sweet corn for processing on about 80 to 90,000 acres every year. But I'm here to talk about seed treatments, and seed treatments are something that are important to all sweet corn growers across the country, across the world. And I'm going to talk about a cooperative trial that has been conducted for almost three decades now. It's a multi-location trial that's conducted annually. And I want to talk about the importance of seed treatments for sweet corn. So this is a picture from one of my trials, and on the left-hand side is a seed that has not been treated with fungicide seed treatments, and in the middle, and is that the right? Yes. The middle. I always get turned around. If you guys are seeing it the same way I am, you are. So on the right there, those are standard seed treatment mixtures with fungicides, and in most of our trials, these seed treatments make a huge difference. And this is kind of a similar setup and situation. Almost all of the sweet corn produced in this country for commercial production is treated with fungicide seed treatment products. And that's because it's really tough to get good stands without them a lot of times. And the only exception really is our organic sweet corn production, and I know they are itching to have some good seed treatment products. So the International Sweet Corn Development Association formed a seed treatment committee back in the late 80s, and in 1989 they organized the first multi-location seed treatment trial. The sweet corn industry in the United States at this time was starting to transition some production to the new super sweet hybrids that were becoming popular, but they were having problems getting good stands with these due to some seed rot and damping off, and they wanted to see if seed treatments could help them with this problem. And just a brief review, most sweet corn hybrids are kind of described by the endosperm genes expressed in kernels, and they're classified like normal sugary, sugary enhanced, and super sweet. Super sweet hybrids are known for being very sweet, having high sugar content, and the ability to retain their sweetness for quite a while after harvest. The shrunken 2 gene in the kernel inhibits conversion of sugars to starch. The downside of this in super sweets is that minimal starch reserves in the kernel can lead to poor germination and low vigor. And with super sweets, they also have a very thin seed coat. They're prone to cracking, and they can be highly susceptible to pathogens. And pathogenic fungi on sweet corn can be a surface contaminant on seed, and some of those can become internally seed-borne, and they become a problem when you plant that corn into a moist environment. There are also soil-borne pathogens that affect the sweet corn, Fusarium, various species of Pythium and Rhizoctonia are some of the real common ones, and those pathogens tend to be common across the country in all environments. All of these pathogens can cause seed rot, damping off, and sometimes just a general weakening of the plant that results in poor performance. The seed company people refer to these poor ears that are produced on weak plants as duds. So that's not good either. All corn are susceptible to these pathogens, of course, but super sweets tend to be highly susceptible due to their inherent weaknesses. So back in 1989, the first of these trials was planted, and it was led by Dr. Krishna Mohan, a plant pathologist, and Dr. Dale Wilson, who's a seed physiologist, and they were both with the University of Idaho at the time. Idaho is where the vast majority of our sweet corn seed is grown, so there's an intense interest in them, seed treatments for sweet corn there. But there were cooperators across the country that also planted the trial, and these were university people, but they were also seed company representatives who had a stake in the positive outcomes for SuperSweets. The first trial included a non-treated control and then 29 seed treatments with combinations of fungicides. Some of these we still use today, like Captan Thyram, and a lot of them are no longer used. They were planted at the same set of treatments were planted at 32 locations across the country. So Drs. Wilson and Mohan produced an extension bulletin called Seedling Blight of Sweet Corn, and in it they made some recommendations for seed treatments on sweet corn in general that were based on the results of these multi-location seed treatment trials that took place in the 90s. And for most part, what they recommended still applies today with probably a few additions. The seed treatments for sweet corn these days are quite complex, layering probably 5 to 6 and sometimes even 7 or 8 different products on that little seed. They almost always include a couple of broad-spectrum protectant fungicide products like Captan, Thyram, or Maxim, or sometimes all of those. Usually a systemic fungicide is included to control internally borne fusarium. A lot of triazole-type fungicides are used. Also, systemic fungicides are often used to control Rhizoctonia, different strobe fungicides. Almost all these seed treatments include metalaxyl to control Pythium. And then more and more, we're starting to see insecticides added on to seed treatments for sweet corn, especially kind of on a case-by-case basis if seed corn maggot or wireworms are likely to be a problem. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing more wireworm and seed corn maggot in vegetable production in general. And then there are seed enhancements, which are a lot of different things, nutrients, products that help the flow of the seed through the planter. This kind of categorizes a lot of different things. So it's almost been 30 years since we started the first of these trials, and yet we continue today because, you know, we're still looking for improvements in products, and there are new seed treatments being developed. So we want to keep on top of those developments. We're also very concerned about losing the products that we already have in a couple of different ways. We are concerned about losing some of the older chemistries through the EPA's re-registration process. When Captan went up for re-registration and Thyram a few years back, we were concerned that we could lose those and not have something that worked as well as them to replace it. So we keep looking for those. We're also concerned about losing fungicides to pathogen resistance. And in the Pacific Northwest, this is a real problem. We are seeing a lot more metalaxyl-resistant Pythium populations in our soils, and that's a tough problem because almost all of the seed is treated with metalaxyl, and because that was virtually the only oomycete fungicide that specifically targeted Pythium, and we didn't have any other modes of action, and so we are really interested in finding other oomycete fungicides to include. And there has been some good news in this front. Valent has an active ingredient called ethiboxam. And I think they market this as Intego. And that has looked pretty good in our trials. So I think there's a couple other companies that are developing some new oomycete fungicides that could have a good role. So we'll have to keep our eye out for those. And then finally, we're really interested. We're really interested in finding some organic seed treatment products that will stand up to pathogen pressure. And I have to say, so far, we have failed miserably in this department. It's been really difficult to find organic seed treatment products that really can handle some of the difficult situations. So the trial every year is organized by a committee. That's the ISCDA Seed Treatment Committee. We meet in Boise every December, right before the regular ISCDA meeting meets in Chicago. And that committee is led by Mike Erickson with the McGregor Company and Ron Baker with H.M. Klaus. And I serve as the research coordinator for the trial. I took over in 2011 when Krishna Mohan retired. So every year, seed treatment companies, manufacturers, mention to us what kinds of treatments they would like to include in the trial. And we take those on a lot of times and then include a couple of standard seed treatment mixtures for comparison. And then we distribute the same set of treatments out to cooperators across the country who plant and evaluate these trials. And really, it's a very simple trial. For the most part, we just look at stand counts, weak plant ratings, and vigor, and we're done by the six-leaf stage. So when all that data is done, they send it to me, and my job is to analyze the data and then put together a report that I present to the ISCDA. This year, we are adding a couple of things. There are some cooperators who are extending this trial to yield, but it is expensive and time-consuming to do that, so not all of our cooperators do that, and we don't expect them to. And then we're taking soil samples at a lot of the locations, and we're assaying those for Fusarium, Pythium, and Rhizoctonia. And we're also testing those soil samples for metalaxyl-resistant Pythium. So we're adding a few more layers to our ability to compare these. But there's no trials like this that look at seed treatments across such a diversity of environments. And so the seed companies who are selecting treatments and the seed company manufacturers find this really useful. We use two different hybrids in the trial, two different super sweets. We always use Super Sweet Jubilee because it is a weak one. It's very susceptible to the pathogens. And if a seed treatment works on Super Sweet Jubilee, it's going to work on everything. But we've also included another super sweet. This last 4 or 5 years, we've looked at Marquette. It's more representative of a typical super sweet that we see planted. Am I almost done? Okay, I'll breeze through this. We have usually 10 to 15 cooperators a year at, or 10 to 15 locations every year with 5 to 7 states represented by that. They're university people and they're seed company people. It's kind of a diverse group of us that are involved in the trials. Analyzing the data can be a little complicated with a large data set, as it often is. So I look for general trends first at each location. And then I also look at, I try to summarize the results across all locations and try to find some situations where I don't get a lot of treatment by location interactions, and we can identify some general trends that way. And just to demonstrate how a lot of times this data is presented, the box and whisker charts are real helpful in ironing out some of these differences because you can, those whiskers can extend out to the minimum and maximum results for each of our locations. And the green are the two standard treatments. The red are the treatments that had worse stand than the standards. And the blue had better, The reds were non-treated control, and then one of those was a nutrient added to the seed with no fungicides. And then that blue one was a Syngenta treatment that had 8 products layered on there. I just threw those in just in case I had time, which I do not. So I'm going to leave it at that. I wanted to present this here because we're always looking for more cooperators and locations for the trials. So if you have any interest in seed treatments for sweet corn or want to put out a simple trial for it, let me know because we're always interested in adding to our group. Thank you.